Welcome to the Shonen Geek, the Shonen Geek and Fast Fret podcast. Done.
Welcome to the Fast Fret and Sean Geek podcast. How you doing, Todd?
This daylight savings time is killing me. It's been a long day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was up at, I usually get up at 5. I was up at 4 this morning, or kind of 4, I guess, right? Is that how that works?
Well, it would have been 4 a couple days ago, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a podcaster, not a mathematician. Anyway, we have guests on again. We're doing guests again. So we found these two people wandering around the neighborhood, and we decided to ask them to come into our realm and talk some music. So introduce yourselves, guys. Who do we have here?
I'm Brian, and that's Jeremy, and I'm the singer, and he's the guitarist for the band Y.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Good day to you, good gentlemen.
So I do have something listed on my list of things to talk about, and one was who can do the best accents. So you've already started off, Brian, so that's awesome.
That was good. I don't think it was good, but all right. You start slapsing into Irish, then we'll have a problem.
Yeah, no kidding. So you're on the tee, Brian, just like me?
Just a little throw coat tee, because I'm kind of gearing up for more rehearsals, and I just thought tonight, because I've been doing voiceover stuff all day, I thought maybe my voice might be a little bit scratchety. Yes.
Yeah, I'm still recovering from my years of dome and singing and not singing properly and doing too many shows and just pushing myself too hard. So I think I got my voice back now.
I didn't have a voice since December. It was just kind of coming. We were rehearsing and everyone would just kind of look at me while we're rehearsing, like, it's getting better. But our show last Friday at the Tap House, we played with Phantom Head, and that I felt great vocally. I don't think I had any issues.
Yeah,
that night.
Good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, that's right. The thing. As a singer, it's I don't know if I want to sing again. Like when I go out and play again, I don't know if I want to sing again. It's just there's too many things that can go wrong as a singer. It's just too tough. Go back to playing.
Well, your instrument is you. Like anyone else can play sick, but Jeremy sings and Mandy sings. I understand Eric sings. We just need to get him to sing. I think he's so busy jumping around his keyboards. Live we're a 5-piece, so we write as a 3-piece. Dave isn't here tonight because he had other commitments that kind of came up and he couldn't move them. So we are percussionless. So
well, I'm glad he's not here because I was just going to fanboy. I'm a drummer and I really like what he does.
He would have loved that. He would have loved that. He doesn't get enough fanboying. Although one woman said she wanted to sit in his lap at the last show. I said,
but he's okay. Good at his look.
That might make it hard to play, but alrighty. He just yelled, "I want to sit in your lap." I'm like, I don't think that's how drums work. Yeah.
There's a lot of loud, obnoxious people.
Since he's not here, can we embarrass the shit out of him? Or
I don't think it's possible. I don't think Dave gets embarrassed. No? Like he does these really goofy drum, like every song we do, even if it's a ballad, he'll end it like it's a Led Zeppelin song as a joke. And he'll just look at him and go, "What?" It's like
he's just trying to embarrass himself.
He's trying to embarrass himself. So. There's no embarrassing him.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you a little story. Like Todd and I used to be in a band with our old man. He was the bass player in that band, and I was the drummer and singer, and sometimes they do both or switch or whatever. And if I ever played something on drums he did not like one of those Led Zeppelin endings, he did not hesitate to turn around. Doesn't matter if we were live or not. And
I
that's going to be fucking cover of Modern Drummer magazine.
Play the fucking song, Sean.
You know what? Live, he's a pro. It's just when we're in rehearsal. He's he goes into he just switches the knob in the back of his head to twit, and so during rehearsal he's in twit mode, and then live he's like rock star mode. He's incredible. Like the way you see him in the video for Soul Declares, that's him live. We're just gonna like, oh, don't get too close. You might lose an eye or something. he goes all in. What's so the point of showering,
goggles,
dude?
Those goggles on his head.
Oh, for that one video?
Is yeah. Is that like, are those prescription or?
No, that was just for the video. We're supposed to be as if we're in the post-apocalyptic world. And
yes.
We had all these different things. And he went, I'm wearing those goggles. Go to town, buddy. I'm going to just wear a kerchief over my face and some aviators. So you were kind of going for like a Book of Eli thing with that.
Oh, yeah.
That was the prophet.
That was for the prophet, yeah.
Yeah, that video took like a whole day to shoot. And then I had to do pickups with an actor with a green screen. And same thing with... Finally, Soul Declares, the video was shot. We had 2 days to prep for that. It turned out we had to move quick. Wait,
2 days, like, right? Get everything ready? Like,
yeah. Like, literally, we found out Mandy was leaving for, like, 12 days, and the single was dropping December 1st, and we were doing a show December 1st. So she was going to be gone for 12 days, be back in time for the show. And I thought, there's no way I can get this video cut and together and get the single. I need it done now. We got to shoot it, like, when? And I thought, well, we got to shoot it Friday. And she's leaving Saturday morning, I think, or she was leaving that later that night. So she literally came from packing and joined us on the set. And usually when we do videos, just the three of us, but this one we wanted to have all of us.
Yeah.
And
there's a different energy by having that.
Yeah. The song really just kind of demanded it, I think, too. And Eric plays a big part keyboard wise in that song. So,
oh, yeah.
But I literally realized we had 2 days. I had a basic idea of what I wanted it to look like. And so I had to go around. I found a bunch of like vintage lamps and we found a location, locked it down. We had the location for 5 hours. That's it. So I went in the night before. I kind of just dressed the set, did a couple like tests to see what the lighting would look like. We got like a kind of a mister in there to kind of mist the, give it kind of a film look. Oh, yeah. All night while we were shooting, all he kept doing was saying, "More steam!
More steam!"
So it was... I can imagine...
From Pirates of the Caribbean.
Stumbling around looking for... Why is the tea always gone? But yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it was crazy, and yet it came together. It shouldn't have worked.
It went very smooth.
Yeah,
like it was a late night, but
it was a late night, and it shouldn't have worked. And then I had an actor lined up, and then that fell through. And then I knew my buddy Chris Reed acts, so I reached out to him and I said, "Would you play this character, this representation of that, the human representation in the story?" And he said, "Sure." So he showed up. We did a bunch of shots. I did a bunch of stuff with green screen. I took him outside. We shot stuff outside. And
how do you know Chris?
I've known him for years, and he had a radio
an old
station
friend of mine.
Yeah, no, he's I've known him on and off for years with his 204 The Hits, and before that I knew him from other radio stations, he's a great guy, and was so good, and we even have his image in the actual CD for the single. He's in on the inside, the picture from the video.
Oh, nice, good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But yeah, he was great, and his acting was spectacular. He did exactly what I was looking for.
Oh, he's phenomenal. I did a movie with him about a long time ago. It was a Star Wars film, like a fan film, and he was one of those guys. Like even like 15 years later, I still talk about working with Chris because it was like an amazing experience.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best. And every time I see him at Comic-Con, he comes running up to me dressed like a really tall, kind of Conan O'Brien-esque Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, you know, Egon on steroids. But yeah, he's just such a sweet guy and he's got a real kind soul to him too. But yeah, he was, "I'll do it. I'll be there in an hour." And he was like, he showed up. I gave him an overcoat. And I said, "We're going to do this, walk here." He took my directions. I said, "Just trust me." And there was some weird lighting with the green screen. It was just kind of flickering light I was using. He didn't understand what I was doing. And then when I placed him in with the time-lapse footage of the traffic, he went, "Oh, okay." So it made sense afterwards. But he had a couple of people saying to me, "How'd you get him in the time lapse looking normal?" I said, "He's not there. He's in front of a big giant green screen in the middle of a hallway." And then I took him outside and did some shots with him as well. So, you know, he was great. It was, the video shouldn't have worked, but it did.
Yeah. So. No, it's good. I actually quite enjoyed it. The funny thing is I never really watched the videos before. I've heard the music tons.
Oh.
So I just spent.
I only direct them. It's not important.
But I sat down. I sat down with the most critical eye in my house. That'd be Abby, my daughter, who does the intros to our show. And I brought her in and said, "Let's watch these together." You know, it was kind of fun because she has a, like her mother, she has like a really good critical eye. So we were watching them together, and she's like, "I like the look of this, but I'm sorry, you don't sound like Ava Max. That's her jam right now." So she wasn't a fan of the music, but.
I just sound like me, and I'm gonna have to live with that. Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's good. Mad Max type of scenery.
Yeah, I like that. That was good.
Yeah, it was weird.
So I have a question, because I listened to you guys. God, shit, like I think you heard the episode we did. I was did one on 92 Kick FM where I just played one of your songs on there, like from way 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 back.
Was that like 2007 or 2008 or something? Or
yeah, something like that. It was Do It Scared.
Oh wow! And, yeah, that's 2013. Yeah,
so that was my introduction, like way back when, and then it was on my. I don't know. It was I had I recommended it a lot, but then I didn't. I had a hard time finding you guys on the internet because why?
It's easier just to type in "Why the band?" Is
yes. Like one word. I learned that.
Or song titles. You type in "Soul Declares" with a right at the top of Google now.
No, I know. Yeah,
that was crazy.
I was like, okay, how do I find? Oh, I'll just do. Well, I did Do It Scared because it's in my history. So.
And it pops up. But I remember just the first week that the video and the single came out, I just typed in Soul Declares and poof, video, you know, our title, our Spotify, everything was just like, all the way down.
You spent time on the SEO, obviously.
It worked. I mean, we found it within the first week, we hit like 5,000 views on the video. And I was just like, well, that's with the algorithm on YouTube. It crushes everything. So.
Yeah. So. Now, Jeremy, you haven't always been in the band, I know. When you, how did you guys meet, the two of you meet?
It was a portal, I think. It was like a
portal?
Like,
what the hell did you just say?
It was a wormhole, and I don't have the physics cleared on it, but we bumped into each other. And I mean, the weird thing is, I've always wanted to work with him. And Dave, our drummer, has always said, oh, you know who we need is a lead guitarist in this band. Is Jeremy. I said, yeah, when I was back in 2007, we did a show with the lineup that we had. It was like an AIDS benefit at U of W, and his band opened. I think you opened, or you, no, we opened for you guys.
We opened for you.
Which band was that?
Elyon.
They were like,
it was like 2-3 year stint of a band.
It kind
of
had like Radiohead vibes, but you kind of hints of like Coldplay, and it was like kind of ethereal, and I don't know. It was really cool. I liked it. I was really
impressed. Ellion.
Ellyon.
Oh, cool. That's a cool name, actually.
Yeah, it is.
The reason I'm asking is, like, I think I recognize Jeremy from pre-Y. So I'm like trying to like figure out what bands you were in, or because I used to watch about 4 or 5 shows a week back in the day, and I was like wondering if we might have
caught him.
Maybe we played at Dylan O'Connor's and what's it? Shannon's?
Shannon's.
We played there a couple times.
Dylan's great. He had a really good stage. The one had a really good stage. One of Pamina, I think.
We played the Zoo once.
So did we.
That was frightening.
But but the sound was incredible. The sound guy there.
The sound guy was wicked. He was so good.
It was like playing it. It smelled like a hockey bag on stage.
Yep.
But the sound was always awesome. The whole time, all I kept thinking was, "Junior hockey. I smell hockey pads."
Yeah.
But yeah, when he joined, it was 2015-ish, I think. And I asked you.
It was December of 16.
Okay.
So Dave was in. Dave knew of Jeremy.
We talked when he said he'll never want to be in this band. I said, "Well, I'd really like to talk." And then I realized I should have just talked to him a long time ago. So I used to see him all the time. But I was like, "Yeah, but he wouldn't want anything to do with us." And then the weird thing was the first time we got together, and just said, "Well, let's just see what happens." And so I had some. We started just kind of jamming, and within I think 4 hours, we wrote like 6 songs.
What?
It wasn't 6. Was it 4 songs, something like that? We wrote The Comeback right away. That was one of the first ones we did, I think.
Oh, was it really? Okay, that's a great.
And then we did. I think God Particle showed up in there somewhere. I remember there was like 3. Okay, maybe it was 3 songs.
Well,
they weren't complete ideas.
They didn't all show up overnight.
No, they came in.
This
pieces,
was like so. I joined. You know, we had a meeting at a Starbucks in like December of 2016. And then it was like holidays, and then 17, it was a new year, and we started getting together once a week, pretty much, if we could.
By a certain point, we were shooting a video for Repair the Breach.
Yeah.
That in 2017, and we got like I think 100 people to show up as extras.
17?
Yeah, I've got. I remember that. I remember that. Yeah.
Okay, so then I'm a year.
I think it's the 15 it's, we started talking.
It, like we spent like a year writing.
Yeah. 17 was the video, first single. Because we didn't, we had an album idea, but we just couldn't record it all. Couldn't afford to record it, so we did the first one was right. Repair the Breach, and then Abstract Art Form did a remix for us of that song,
that,
which
that's cool. I like that one when that sort of shit happens.
Yeah, and but yeah, but I did find that you'd said you weren't much, you didn't write a lot. You used to kind of embellish on other people's stuff, but as soon as I get together with him, he had stuff that was just really great, and even in rehearsals. Like us, we're Soul Declares out. We're playing, and whenever we're playing or rehearsing, and then Dave knows this too. As soon as Jeremy's like, if I go run off and get a glass of water or go take a piss and come back, he starts playing something, and I'll go, oh, what is that? And he'll either say, oh, it's from a video game, or it's a little Daniel Lanois, or something I've been fiddling with, or oh, it's just me messing around with like a Tears for Fears riff. And but when he says, I don't know, Dave will look at me, and then we all stop, and everyone takes their phones out and starts recording and go, okay, let's see where this goes. And that's sort of where the best song is going to happen. Like, Calloused Heart was finished. It was an unfinished idea, and then it kind of finished in rehearsal. But Soul Declares was one of these moments that just kind of happened. I think we just kept fiddling. We stopped everything and just kept fiddling with it until we had a basic skeleton of a song. And then it kept evolving.
Yeah.
It kept improving. It didn't get worse. Yeah, it
went
better,
through
better, better.
Quite a long sort of process. Well, it took us a while for, like, as the whole band to kind of, when Mandy came in with the bass, to figure out just the right individual parts. We had the song, but it was like trying to fit all the pieces together properly.
Well, you said
that took a while. Yeah. You said it took a while for us, for some reason, to like memorize it too, because we had tried so many different combinations of things, riffs doing this, or like the bass is doing this. No, the guitar is doing this instead. I think that was one where I had a guitar riff in my head and then realized later, oh no, that's the bass line.
So you fit that to Mandy, and then she kind of fiddled around with it.
Yeah.
And then she nailed it.
Oh. That was her first time in the studio too on this song. She's never been in a recording studio.
Yeah, she was in.
She's never been in a music video.
Yeah,
she's
I remember you saying that.
Just like a hired gun. And she came to the studio. We actually filmed her the day she was in the studio. And I remember after we rehearsed, and Jeremy said, you should just play the part. We've been playing it all summer at festivals. Just, why don't you play it? You know it. And so she was like, oh, okay. And then as she's walking out to her car, I was kind of walking out with her just to make sure she got out to the parking lot. And she goes, she turns around, she goes, I've never done this before. Said, what are you talking about? She goes, I've never been in the studio. I've never recorded anything. I said, oh, well, that'd be fine. And then I walked in, oh my gosh, it's probably a bigger moment for her than it is for us. And she nailed it. I think she did it in two takes.
Abby, when she watched the video that she was in, my daughter, she's like, that's the coolest person in the band, Dad. That's what she said.
That's what those other girls were saying at the show on Friday. It's like, you're so hot.
You're amazing. It's
like, yeah. And I just kept thinking, Dad's what we have her. That's what it's all
about. Oh, and she liked Dave's hair. That was the other thing she said.
Dave has, he's got the flippity hair. He knows what he's doing with that flippity hair.
Right.
Special hair.
Oh, that's awesome.
We used to just say it was like, it's the Witcher. We have the Witcher on. I remember when I said, and on the drums, Geralt of Rivia. He's got the potions. If his drumming starts to get low, he'll take a potion and that drumming will speed up. We'll be doing death metal in a minute.
So when you guys, do you guys collaborate together when you guys are actually writing music, or who does it start with? One person, like, does Brian, do you show up with something, or Jeremy has a riff, or
it always varies back and forth? Yeah.
Sometimes it's his, he has a riff, and I go, wait, I think I got something. Other times, I like Soul Declares, I made that up. I didn't really have any lyrics. I was just doing that kind of weird language I do that doesn't have words,
like, but scatting, like scatting.
Well, right? And I also think, like, the stuff we're writing now is that more of that case, like. The previous album, the first one that I was on,
our best
so far, was a lot. Like, a lot of it was already, like, you had lyrics, right?
I had like little scraps of paper and ideas on my phone notes,
but I was willing to adjust. Over the course of the year, you know, we would get together at your studio,
Rehearsal space.
Rehearsal space.
I was borrowing, I'm calling a lot of favors just to, you know, and I record stuff on like Audacity, so you could kind of get multiple tracks.
Yep.
And save it and
make a bunch of demos.
But I think really, and then Dave would come in and kind of fiddle around. He'd bring like part of a drum kit and just kind of bang things out. But
he
came
in every once in a while. I feel like it was mostly just us.
Yeah. I think he was waiting for us to get all the dirt off. You know, he wasn't going to come in and eat the carrots until we cleaned them well. And then and then he'll eat the carrots.
So basic structure was there.
Yeah. No, it's funny. But this, in our rehearsal space, it's really a great place for rehearsing for shows. But there's always that possibility that something's going to show up, or something will show up. And when he's noodling, warming up, and I go, "What's that?" He goes, "I don't know. I'm just warming up." I said, no, that's a song.
Record.
And then we just start. We have to record. So if I ad lib something, it's gone. Like we've got about 5 or 6 songs that are kind of just sitting and holding right now.
Yeah.
We have some that are done. That one was a holdover from the last album that's been didn't feel like it. Maybe just didn't have time to record it, or it doesn't. It fits better now with what we're doing. So like Calloused Heart and Soul Declares, and there's a song we're working on called Glass Houses and Kettles Black, and it's a great tune. But I have a feeling even once we get in the studio, it's going to evolve some more. It won't be the same song by the time we're done.
It's almost really best that way. Like I think I know when Todd and I are writing. In whichever project we're in, like sometimes I'll come forward with the idea and I've got it. I get everything kind of all planned out in my head and I'll ask Todd, can you play this? And then, but then the song at the end never sounds the same, but it always sounds way better because the minute that like you guys seem to have a really good chemistry, just like Todd and I. So it's like that chemistry takes that germ of an idea, which is good, and it makes it great. Like I think that's kind of what you guys are doing. It's great idea coming in, but it gets even better. And it's the chemistry. It's like watching a movie and seeing two actors, you know, they may have their lines, but they may improvise some of those lines. And then all of a sudden it's a magical scene. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's why Chris Nolan uses all the same actors. Cause I think he knows they know how to work off each other. I think two with us is we have a safe space in the sense that it's like, there's no bad ideas. Like if I venture out on a vocal idea and then I completely fall flat or it goes nowhere, no one's going, ooh, it's like, it's attempts. It's all about the attempts. And every so often you kind of don't fall, you kind of fly. So I think it's always like the baby bird process of just jumping out of the nest until you stop hitting the ground. And I think that's really great is that it feels really safe that you can absolutely suck while you're trying to find your way to something special. And,
I feel like all great ideas come from bad ideas first, right? Like
possibly. We've been really fortunate though that we've had such great moments. And I think that Jeremy is such a brilliant artist. I mean, I find when I'm working with him, I'm always feeling like, well, I'm going to be fine because Jeremy's here and Dave's here. It's going to be fine. They're going to, I can kind of do my arts project kind of finger painting with lyrics and vocals, but they're going to help me not, splatter too far out of range. And I think too, is like, I'm in a position where I'll go, I'll cut the lyrics there. They don't need lyrics there. I think this should be silent, or there's no like, this is my thing. And I really love that. We really kind of put the song first. I've never felt like I would immediately, if it felt the song should be instrumental, no vocal, I would just step away if it was best for that piece of music. So, and the thing is too, the last 2 songs we've done are very long. We've had to do edits and we're saying, well, still going along. Yeah. But they fly by. And I just, at that point now, I was like, I'm not pandering to radio play anymore. We're going to write the song the way it feels it should be when it needs to say, and we'll do a radio edit and send it out. But I mean,
but it's like you said, I was listening to that interview you did. I can't remember what radio station it was or, but you were chasing your numbers. You're chasing the download. You're trying to see. And it's like,
Seattle. Shit. Yeah. We were on that Seattle station.
Yeah. None of that shit matters. No, honestly, if you're doing the song that brings something out of you, that's all that matters. Who cares about, I like even on the podcast or Dome when we had our, like how many do we sell? How many streams are we get? I used to look at that stuff all the time. And then the minute I stopped, I'm suddenly happy and I'm actually not second guessing, what we've created. I'm actually literally enjoying what we've created. It's like, I like what we did. I like the song we wrote, or I like the podcast we put out, or, or the thing that I wrote. Like, the minute you start wondering about if other people like it or not, then you're doing it for the wrong reason. I feel
it's like that Rick Rubin thing, and even David Bowie said that. He said, "Don't create for the gallery. It has to be authentic." And the thing is, when people see you're authentic, they'll respond to it. Like, we've had so many shows. How many people come up to me? We've opened for somebody, like even that last show. And this one woman came to me, her and her husband said, "I'm a big music snob." And I went, "Oh, okay." And I thought, here we go. They said, "You had everything I like in music is in your music." And I went, "Okay, thank you." And then she walked away and I was like, great. But that's a win, is that I think people see there's a sincerity in what we're doing, and we give everything we can on stage. And sometimes I go a bit over the top and I'll do crazy stuff. We wander around the club playing. He was following me, I was following him. But it's all about whatever it takes to get the sound out and get the emotion out and being real. And if you get into that place of trying to look cool or trying to, you know, we know we're not cool. We just know we're just being real. And we're just trying to express ourselves. I mean, I came up on Radiohead. So that's a band that just didn't care about that stuff. It was always just about, is the song great? That's fine. You know, at my own expense, as long as the song's great. And I think there's that connection to people too, right? That you have people come up to you and say, this song means something. We have Not the End. And I've had several people, including one who comes to every show. So that song is my song, because it's talking about, you know, getting up after you've been knocked down for like the 100th time. And it was written about me feeling like I was just sick of being knocked down all the time. And every time I'd kind of get a couple steps forward, I get knocked down. Or there's always somebody who wanted to, like, you know, see me fail. And it's like, why did I? And I got to the point where I didn't care if they enjoy it. They enjoy seeing me fail. I'm going to keep trying, because there'll be no failure if I wasn't trying.
That's right.
And
can't succeed unless you fail.
And there's no failure in falling. There's just failure in not getting back up. Mm-hmm. And that's what that song's about. And I think too, is there's that connection to people. When you have a song and you see someone come up to you and say, well, this song does this for me, or I don't feel as suicidal. I don't in any way think that a song is medicine or something, but if it gives somebody comfort and they're going through anxiety or they're dealing with depression, and the song makes them feel like they're not alone, or they feel like they can use that song as an anthem for their day to keep them going, or they're humming it to themselves, or it reminds them that they're going to be okay, or there's better days coming. That's what art is. That's what art is its best, and that's your legacy. So a song well written is its best reward. It's its own reward, really, for you. And so, yeah, the money and the stress. Look, we would love to make a living at this. We'd love to. The idea of having lots of people come to shows would be great, because that means more people are hearing the music and more people are being affected. There's no agenda, but it's just, we really believe in these songs, and we believe that there's a reason they came to us, and we want to do justice to them live, and do justice to them in the studio. So when we do a show, if it's 2 people or it's 1,000 people, we never do a half-ass show, because if we ended up dead or broke up or something happened and the next, you know, and then, oh, I saw their last show and they phoned it in, I'd much rather say I saw them. It was only about myself and my friend there, but they gave us everything. That's why you do it, because it's a pleasure and it's a gift to be able to play music live and have music out and a legacy of recorded songs. And if it's only 2 people that it touches, then that's who it was supposed to go to.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
about the masses.
You know, I agree with that. Like, Todd and I played a lot of empty houses, that's for sure. But it's like, you know what? Like me getting to play with my brother. Like, so for me, like maybe it's a bit different. But like me playing with my brother is a big deal, because, you know, like, he's Todd. He's, you know, he's my buddy, and us playing together. Like, I don't even care who's in the room at that point. But if someone, you know, gets off on it, it's like, wow, you know, these guys are good. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I'm playing with, you know, probably my best friend right here, you know, and it's probably the same for you guys. It's like, but if you're playing for Jeremy, and Jeremy's playing for Brian and playing for Dave and the rest of the group, and you're just playing for each other and enjoying each other's company, creating music together.
Everybody,
if you're not playing to the crowd, the crowd's still going to like feed off on it. Like,
oh, and yeah, we are definitely trying to connect with them, though. We're very aware that people are there. I make eye contact with people. I leave the stage a lot. I get in people's faces. I had a girl come up to me, and she was FaceTiming.
Your new toy.
Yeah, and I got the wireless mic. So, but this girl came up to me. She was on FaceTime with somebody, and she was like, so I just started singing to her. Was on FaceTime with her, and I just thought, what are you doing? She's like, okay, that was cool.
Just having fun.
Yeah, and I think honestly, as I've said, I mean, I remember that John Baptiste post or the statement he made when he won, I think, a Grammy for something. He said, music has a way to find the people. It has a radar that helps it find the people that need it. So you don't have to worry about, you know, getting people to pay attention. It will find the people it needs to find.
That's a good saying.
Yeah. So yeah,
I like that.
Very good.
Yeah. And we believe in these songs, and we try to live up to them because they feel much bigger than us. So
now, who are your influences? I wrote a couple down because when I hear you guys playing, I really get a feel of, there's a couple of bands out there, well-known bands, and it kind of gives me that feel of your style. And the first one I noticed was U2. There's a bit of a style that you have, and between that and the Cult.
Well, I get the Cult thing. I just never listened to the Cult. I don't know why we get that. I think it's just wasn't my thing.
Oh no, but you know what? Like the cult has two songs that get played on the radio all the time.
Yeah.
But they get a million more songs. They're actually a way better band than people give them credit.
Well, I have nothing. I remember Lover Little Machine and stuff, and I just thought, I always found like he's an interesting singer. I just feel like range wise, I think I got a little bit more going on there. But for me, it was, yeah, I can see U2. One of my very first concert I ever went to, I was gifted some tickets to see U2, Zoo TV in Vancouver before they did the outside shows. So like I was overwhelmed. And I think the Pixies opened, and it was just like it was like 92 or something like that. I was just like 1992, and I was just stunned because I'd never seen anything. I'd never really been to a rock show, so it blew my mind. And I thought, oh, I can do this. And you see Led Zeppelin, I'm like, I can't do that. You know, but I see that I could do that. And Radiohead, I mean, Radiohead was a big part of, you know, my upbringing because I just love what they do. And now I listen to I like Muse, although I go through Muse phases. And I also really like, I mean, I enjoy The Killers. I don't know.
I can hear some Interpol in your music too.
Oh, that's cool. I like Interpol.
And Interpol's Jeremy, awesome.
We kind of share Interpol. Similar. You like a lot of different stuff.
Similar,
Manchester Orchestra.
Stuff. What about you, Jeremy? Like, what's your stuff?
I think when I really started getting into music, definitely U2, Uktung Baby, that album,
Ground Zero, man,
was
Ground
one
Zero.
Of the first kind of albums. I think it was like my brother's. I don't know. I borrowed it, but. So yeah, the Edge's way of approaching guitar with effects and stuff has influenced me greatly. And like over the years, I guess, you know, Muse, The Killers, who else?
I'm waiting for a left turn to come here, like in some form, some sort of Albuquerque here, like some band that we wouldn't even think of.
See, you know, I knew I should have made a left turn at Albuquerque.
Delirious. They're a UK band. I grew up on a lot of that.
Was it you that said you like Talking Heads stuff too, or was that someone else? No, it was someone else. I don't know. Someone said they like Talking Heads.
You had mentioned the Pixies before. Like, I can hear some kind of Pixie stuff going on in your playing.
I saw them open for you too, and that was sort of my introduction to them. I didn't really know much about. My mom knew a lot about the Pixies, and
that's
so
sad. That's my number one favorite band for hands down. But like Jeremy's style, though, like there's some Joey Santiago going on there, just kind of some dissonance, and then
some Tom Morello moments too. I hear in some Audio Slave kind of moments happening in there sometimes. But I think too. Mm-hmm. Jack White. Jack White was had an impact during a period of our writing. I think Jack White's.
Like Jack White's solo stuff or White's?
Yeah,
stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Lazaretto? Is that the album? Yeah.
that's where The Prophet kind of came out of. And yeah, there's so many. Oh, Jeff Buckley for me too. Jeff Buckley was a big. Someone gave me a CD of his. It was like his only album, Grace. And they said, listen to this. I think you need to hear this. Because I was just starting to get into singing. And I said, you need to listen to this. So I listened to it. And there was just sort of this crazy kind of gravel, but then also this beautiful falsetto to his voice. And I thought, wow, that's. Amazing. That kind of fell into that Tom York era.
Mute Math is another one for me.
Oh my gosh, yes. Mute Math.
Okay. Mute Math, yeah. They're
from New Orleans.
They're from New Orleans, yeah. The original lineup, I don't think, is the same. They might write still together, but.
I saw them on Letterman one time.
Man,
he was blown away by them. He was like, are those your drums? Did you buy those?
They're really good.
The drummer would sit down and duct tape his headphones on.
They put on quite a show.
And then he would and then they switch instruments and they start passing drums around. And then he'd take his floor tom and he'd stand on it and the crowd would carry it and he'd be like balancing on top of this floor tom.
And that's awesome.
Kind of sounded like the Police, like early Police mixed with Chaos. I don't know. It was, but there's such great groove and there's soul to it, but yet it still rocks.
There's some soul jazz kind of influence. Like they're incredibly talented. Great. Like, yeah.
I love that like song. Chaos.
I am gonna be looking for every single one of these bands I don't recognize and add that.
Mute Math. They got used in a car commercial for Blood Pressure. I think the song Blood Pressure was used in a car commercial. Was it Kia or something?
Was it?
So yeah, I saw the ad. Went, whoa, well, what's going on? Because they don't do commercials, but
that's
they have a song called
is.
Yeah. They had
Typical and Chaos were like my top favorites of theirs.
Spotlight, that was another big hit, and I think that might have been in one of the I feel like one of their songs was in one of the Twilight movies,
possibly. Yeah,
on the one of the soundtracks.
I
maybe
remember reaching
or am
out
I thinking
to them
of a different movie.
They played the West End one time, and I reached out to them before the show and I said, "You guys need an opening act," and they said, "Oh, geez, we do have somebody locally. If you guys reached out earlier," and I was like, "What?"
Sad. I missed that show. They've never been back here.
I found a T-shirt from the show at a Value Village, and I can't find it now. It's vanished. It's somewhere in the, annals of lost
actually,
lyrics.
Early on, when I was like just in my room learning how to play guitar every single day, one of the artists that I listened to a lot actually was Edwin McCain. He's from down south in the States. He's a singer-songwriter. Like he had all the wedding hits. I'll be.
Oh, this guy. Okay.
Your crying shoulder. That guy.
I've heard that
guy
at weddings, yeah.
And
he's like a modern Neil Diamond.
I have a few of his albums, and they're all like seasoned musicians. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. There was something about it. He influenced my like acoustic playing definitely, and I don't know.
Wow.
That was just something I stumbled across when I was younger. So
I think Dave likes Switchfoot a lot. He's talking about Switchfoot a lot.
Switchfoot, yes. Switchfoot. Like, I also was into Switchfoot. Yes. Yeah.
I liked some of their stuff. I thought it was really good. What was that one? What was the song? Was it Move or? It was one that someone was talking about it on. It was a bunch of people talking about it on TikTok. Dare You to Move. That song, I guess, had a real impact.
A few songs in that movie, Walk to Remember.
That's what it was.
That's what it was. Okay, I was trying to make the connection.
It kind of boosted their popularity. Yeah. Dare you to move.
Well, I remember you'd hear him like on Kick FM once in a while. You'd hear him on Freak. I think you even heard. I heard some Switchfoot on City one time, but I don't know if it was just like feature play or what. But yeah, I know it's wild. It's just the things you kind of like. Daniel Lanois' first few albums I really liked a lot too. The Tea
which
Party,
which I'm only recently now.
But why did you get into Daniel Lanois? Because I've loved Daniel as a producer, and I mean he's. Produced.
I made you listen, damn it!
Well, I got into Daniel Lanois pretty much because of Red Dead Redemption 2, because he did the soundtrack portion.
I have that game.
Of that game.
Yeah, you beat
and I just, game. I'm just like, I'm obsessed with that soundtrack. It lives in my head rent free.
Yeah, like, he plays it sometimes, and we're just sitting around. That's the way it is. 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 Or he'll slip into like, was it, I haven't done it for a while, where he used to sometimes play Tears for Fears. Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And I was like, what is that? What is that? And you were just like noodling on it. And I was like, I know that song.
That's some there. You know, there's a lot of songs like that. It's especially kind of, Tears for Fears.
Yeah.
I like growing up, I would hear those songs on the radio, but they really impacted me. Like there was, I remember them clearly. Not that I knew who they were, but you know, I was fairly young. But like nowadays, when I with the, you know, you have Spotify, you can just access anything, and I'm like, yes, this is so cool. I remember this song. This is them. They have so many hits. I had no idea.
But you introduced me to a lot of really cool bands that you heard on like CBC and stuff too.
CBC Radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was it? Was it Monsters and Men?
Of Monsters and Men. Yeah, I got into them. I got into.
If only we had Kick FM still around, because honestly,
how about just a station that played like '90s to now, like rock and pop. That's what we need, but we don't have that here in Winnipeg. They have it in every other city in Canada. But we don't.
That's funny,
it.
Right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Why are the Killers not playing Winnipeg? Well, because no one's playing them. That's why.
Isn't that weird?
City
though,
like, not getting any airplay. Yeah.
Why wouldn't that get airplay? Like, I don't like my wife and I play a lot of rock band because my wife's not a musician. So I always wanted her to pick up an instrument so I could play with her. So Rock Band's the closest we get. Right. So Killers, you know, hey, whatever works. Right. Yeah. But, like she discovered the Killers on there. She discovered the Talking Heads on there. She discovered Bob Dylan. That's where she discovered Bob Dylan from, was from Rock Band.
Oh, wow. My mom's a big Bob Dylan Beatles fan.
Oh, my mom was the one who told me about Lord, though. That's kind of funny. She goes, hey, you should have this girl.
Your mom,
Lord,
really?
Great. Yeah, my mom goes, you should check out Lord. I went, okay.
I like Lord. I actually do like Lord quite a bit.
Well, that first album she was really into. What I've been listening to a lot lately, though, because I love Radiohead, is I've been listening to The Smile, which is Tom York and Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead. And they had formed this band because Radiohead's kind of on a hiatus.
Yeah.
And they, I think they played the Montreal Jazz Festival last year. But they, it's all organic instruments. So if you hear horns and things and cello, it's people on stage. And then the band swaps instruments too. So Tom will play bass sometimes. And it's like Radiohead, but it's Radiohead, but really organic instruments. Like real, like it's not a lot of sampling.
Because they started going really like digital and
like. And that's great. It's crazy fun to watch them do that. But But I mean, I was blown away. Like there's a song that I still stuck in my head, that Free in the Knowledge from the first album. Like they put out two albums in like 2 years.
I didn't even hear that stuff. I'm gonna have to go listen. I'm a big Radiohead fan. Yeah. So
it's just called it's called The Smile, and it's Tom York has side projects and Adams for Peace and Tom York albums, but The Smile is just really great. And you got Johnny Greenwood on guitar and piano, and they kind of play all different kinds of instruments.
Free in the knowledge that one day this will. Just a bad moment. We were fumbling around, but we won't get caught like that. We're soldiers on our backs. We won't get
that. And I also really love watching those basement sessions, like when Radiohead did, like in Rainbows, from front to end in this basement. I don't know if it's at BBC or wherever it is, but they just, it's like a rehearsal space, and they just play the whole album. It's kind of wild.
Can we agree that in Rainbows is
Sorry.
Lenny Kravitz.
Sorry. I just thought of another influence of mine, Lenny Kravitz.
Lenny Kravitz for an afternoon. I hung out with Lenny for an afternoon. I'll have to show you the picture. Yeah. Really nice. And he's a nice guy, too.
Yeah.
Super nice guy. Yeah.
In Rainbows, best Radiohead album or not?
You know, I mean, the perfect radio album, I'd say, is The Bends, because it's got so many hits on it. But
yeah, sure.
OK Computer's great. I really like Hail to the Thief, which has There. That's one of my favorites.
Hail to the Thief was the first album that I had. Actually, my friend from my previous band burnt a copy for
The band. He didn't pirate anything. Bought the band.
And I was like, man, what is this? Like, I knew who Radiohead was, but just
that was a really,
whatever
really
was on the radio album. And man, I was like, man, this is really dark. And well, I don't know, I have to be in the right mood now to listen to Radiohead one. But I do agree, in Rainbows though is the most palatable for people who aren't necessarily
the Bends,
into Radiohead.
The Bends.
Well, The Bends is
High and Dry, Fake Plastic Trees.
Yeah,
just,
that's true.
Street Spirit.
That was a rock band favorite, Fake Plastic Trees. We played that one all the time.
But in Rainbows was Free.
Yeah, that was free. But I ended up buying a copy.
I did.
Well, I bought a copy.
And it had all the little stickers, and you could create your own cover.
Yeah.
It was wild.
That was the moment where my wife really won out. Like, there's a couple of moments where my wife did a couple of amazing things. One was, Sean likes this Radiohead band. I bet she doesn't know about this album. So she actually bought it for me. And she had to buy it through the website. Like you couldn't buy it like normal ways. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So she bought the digital copy and then ordered it and then paid for it. And then the other time was when she bought me tickets for the Pixies, and she managed to get tickets for that. And that was like wicked. So, you know, I paid her back and I went to see Taylor Swift with her. That was my return. But the price wasn't the same as for the Pixies as it was for Taylor Swift, let me tell you.
I've had the opportunity to see July Talk now, I think, two or three times. They were mind-blowing as a band. Like, I didn't know what to expect.
And I only went because I got a friend of mine gave me a ticket. He said, I got a spare ticket for Metric. And I went, oh, okay, cool. I love Metric. So went and July Talk opened, and it was at the arena. And it's like a year or two ago. And just, what the hell am I watching here? It was incredible. It was like stage performance. And it was like theater. And it was like they were working off each other. Like they were like this fighting couple. And it was like, you know, one of those French dancers that look like they're beating each other up, but they're not. And she would grab his hair and he's singing. And
yeah, I just got turned on to that this year.
Yeah, they're wild live. I mean, but it was such a great stage performance. Yeah, it's funny, you know, it's the stuff you find and or you discover something. Or I love when people, someone shows me something new and I go, oh, well, he does that. I get songs from him and art one time.
Half Moon Run.
Half Moon Run.
From Ontario.
And I checked them out. I was like, holy crap, these guys are good. Like, really good. Like, there's some great Canadian music right now.
Yeah.
I think we're and I think Winnipeg right now, too. You got Moonfield, who's a great band here. Sunbreather, 1221, which is great. Three Brothers.
We actually played with them.
Yeah, they're great.
Oh, they're great.
we played two shows with those guys. Slowmobile.
Slowmobile. Okay.
Yeah, it was just like they're just really good. And we just that Phantom Head show we just did. That guy, the singer for Phantom Head. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I haven't heard them yet. That's a new one for me.
Live though, that guy's voice is. He's the drummer. Like he's drumming and singing live, and it's like pristine, perfect vocals. Mm-hmm. They even did a cover of "Show Me How to Live" by Audioslave, and it's like, what? And he's drumming a full out and singing
and singing.
Like, Dave looks at me. I was like, "What do you think of that?" I said, "Well, I have enough trouble singing and just moving around without tripping over people. So, no, I couldn't do that. Couldn't drum. Have the coordination to drum and sing."
Yeah, I do. It's very difficult, but there's certain songs where the vocal rhythm does not go with the drum rhythm, their counter. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Chewing gum and patting your head at the same time.
He sings like an angel though. Like it's just incredible.
Can't see you in the eyes. My own little parasite. We caught up in flames, just seeking for peace.
Well, that's key. So what's the next thing?
We're playing. We've been added to the bill for a cancer benefit at the Park Theater. Right? Yeah, and it's Arrow Car Model 4, who are just incredible. And the first day said, "Oh, you just go on after us. I'm not following you guys." If you heard them, they're like, it's like following Disturbed. I'm not following this. We'll go on before you because you guys are going to bring the house down. They're incredible. Also, DB and the Dead Beats. I don't know much about them. I just know that, and it's a show for Never Alone Cancer Foundation and also Vince Kroshak, who's dealt with a brain tumor. And he's a great videographer who does a lot of shows and photography, and he's just this amazing guy. I've been chatting with him. I haven't met him, but I've been chatting with him online quite a bit. So looking forward to meeting him. I'm going to be filming stuff. I said, dude, just relax and enjoy the music. But no, he's going to be doing his thing. That's his art. But we never played the Park before.
Really?
Yeah. We've never played the Park Theater. We played some nice stage. We played Hilltop Resort. We played all these different like big stages, which is great. It's fun playing those big stages, but to play the Park, it's just exciting. So we're just kind of getting all the details worked out for that and what we need to work on for gear and what crew we need and what crew we don't need. And I'm looking forward to this. Well, we're going to be the first band on. So I think we're going on 9:30-ish, maybe 9. So it's an all ages room, the Park, which is great. And, it's a great cause, and so you should be going to these shows going, oh, we're going to make some money for recording. And this show, we're going in, hey, can we donate some money from our merch? Like I said, we were talking to this. I said, well, you said you guys can sell merch. I said, yeah, but we probably should donate something from the merch. That we kind of, it's a little self-serving if we're there selling merch at a benefit show. Mm-hmm. So we're going to figure out a way to donate a percentage from all the merch that we sell at the show.
to the foundation. So,
the other
that's March 30th, by the way.
March 30th.
Yeah, it's a Saturday. You can get your tickets at myparktheater.com. Like, they have them on sale online. $10 in advance and $15 at the door. So I know Winnipeg's a walk-up city, but it'd be great if people would, you know, buy them early, because I think they want to kind of gauge how it's going to do. I don't know. You can get tickets from some of the bands too. But I'm pretty sure you can buy them online at myparktheater.com, like the Park Theater website.
I believe that's right.
For all the bands.
Yeah. What's that?
And you see all the bands for.
Yeah. There's just three of us, I believe. I think there's also going to be some other auctions and different things going on there too. So
three bands for $10.
Yeah.
Can't beat that.
No.
Todd, what did you pay for Journey? I'm sure it wasn't that.
No.
That's kind of our price range for shows. We're usually around $10, $15 for all our gigs. So.
Oh my God, this is so awesome. We have a lot more to come. But we're going to cap it off here. Go watch them play this weekend. Enjoy the show. And come back to our show next week, part two. Adios.
Thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week. And bye. Have a good day.
Hey, gang. Sean Geek here.
And Fast Fret.
And we have two storefronts. If you are a TeePublic fan, you can browse our inventory over at TeePublic, which is teepublic.com/SeanGeekPodcast.
Or redbubble.com/people/SeanGeekPodcast.
You can get anything from either storefront, from t-shirts, stickers, phone cases, accessories of all kinds. We're talking masks, notebooks, mugs, pillows, totes, tapestries.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Everything's there. Just go to those addresses. Also, check the show notes and help support the show. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.